Hey guys, what's up? Kevin Jones, founder of Blue Wire. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Do me a favor, send it to one of your friends. We're growing this network, grassroots style. It takes everyone. You're a part of our team if you send this to one of your friends. All right, enjoy this podcast and appreciate your support.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. I'm here, as always, with Jason Pat. Jason, have you been enjoying the playoffs so far?
I have been. I was sick last week. If you missed us, we did not record last week because I was feeling like shit. I wouldn't have been able to talk. I had been hacking up a storm. It was pretty awful. But I have been enjoying the playoffs. I guess the first round, classic, kind of not the best first round. There were some exciting games, some exciting upsets to start. But now I think most people are looking forward to the second round. The Eastern Conference second round should be great. The Sixers and Raptors, Bucks and Celtics. Now the Rockets just advanced. Warriors will probably advance here tonight as well. And then obviously Dame Lillard going absolutely apeshit. Ton of fun to watch them beat go at Russ and the Thunder. Really fun series. And then Nuggets Spurs has also been a pretty fun series. It has been nice to watch, I guess, just good basketball as opposed to the Bulls basketball. Obviously the Bulls season ended several weeks ago after their 60-loss season, a terrible season. So it's been fun. It's been fun to watch a little quality basketball for a little bit here.
Yeah, totally. I was watching a bit of the playoffs and seeing Kevin Durant just hit like these turnaround fadeaways that are nothing but net, straight cash every time. I'm like, this is like seeing an actual magic trick after spending the last 3 months exclusively watching college basketball. But we're in kind of the start of the Bulls offseason right now. The lottery is still about 3 weeks away. We'll have the draft. We'll have free agency at the beginning of July. But I thought that this would be a good opportunity to bring on one of my favorite follows among Bulls analysts on Twitter, among Bulls writers. That's Kevin Farragan, who you can follow at NBA Couchside. Kevin, what's going on, dude? You're actually moving to Chicago pretty soon.
I am. I will be out
there. You're rooming with Jim Boylan.
Thankfully, that is not the case. Living on my own, actually, I realized this recently, the first time ever. I've always had a roommate of some kind or been living at home with family or whatever. So 33 years old when I finally get out there and finally living on my own. I'm all grown up.
We're proud of you, man.
I appreciate it.
Let's just start off with just some big picture Bulls stuff right now, because at this juncture in the playoffs, you know, we're seeing Philly make it to the second round. It's sort of like the last remaining pieces of the process in a lot of ways. Like, they sort of sold out on the process to sort of expedite the process by getting Jimmy Butler, by getting Tobias Harris. Are the Bulls at where Philly was at a few years ago? What are sort of the ways that these two rebuilds can be compared and contrasted? And more than anything, Kevin, just where do you see the Bulls at right now in the NBA's general landscape?
I would say hell no. They're not in the same position as the Sixers were in terms of where they were at in the second. I guess this is year two of the tank that they don't want to call a tank. That is totally a tank. They haven't done the same things that the Sixers did. The whole thing with the process, and I think this gets lost a lot, is that what Hinkie did with the process was it was basically an acknowledgement that most of the drafting of players is a crapshoot, and so you have to just get as many bites at the apple as possible. And that's why he got so many second round picks and would just take flyers on guys. It's why they were so aggressive about pursuing first round picks and just trying to tank for as long as possible until they felt like they had their, you know, cornerstone franchise changers. The Bulls haven't really done that. They haven't stacked assets in any significant way, and they've gotten some good pieces, but they've mostly just kind of tripped over things and fallen into this stuff. I think they, in both cases with Wendell Carter and with Lauri Markkanen, I think they were kind of consensus best players available when they were drafted. And, you know, that was who they took. I just don't think that, you know, that they've done this anywhere near what the process was in terms of asset accumulation. You know, I think the closest thing that they've done that was processy lately was the trade for Wayne Selden and the second round picks that they got from the Grizzlies. But, you know, overall they have not done the same job of stacking assets. And you know, the Jimmy Butler trade, if you think that Sam Hinkie would have settled for getting Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and also given up the number 16 pick in the Jimmy Butler trade, you know, you're crazy. Like, that would not have happened with Hinkie.
So I guess just like with what they do have, and you talk about like tanking, you talk about the tank that's not a tank. Like, they clearly wanted a tank for like 1 year. They did not anticipate this year being a tank, and they're probably going to end up with a better pick this year than they did last year. And I do kind of agree with you with like the Lowry pick and the Wendell pick. Like, I feel like the Wendell pick was lauded as like the safe pick there at seven, and Lowry also kind of, he was the kind of guy that was there. What do you make, like, what do you think of about the, like, Lowry and Wendell, like that front court together? What do you think of Zach LaVine? Like, do you think any of these guys that they have are like legitimate pieces of like the next Bulls contender? I guess just what's your outlook on these guys that they have collected here for right now?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I liked some of the stuff I saw from Lowry in February, like everybody else. I think that it's would be very easy to get caught up in a 10-game sample a little bit too much. If you look at his overall numbers for the whole year, he looked, you know, basically the same as he did last year. I think he was better for the most part, but I think it's a little concerning that he's been hurt now in both of his, sure. You know, and missed time in both of his first years. And this year he missed time at the front and the back of the season. You know, maybe it's just freak stuff and it won't be a problem for him going forward, but you know, it also hurts your development with him to have him lose time when he's this young. And I think that I don't trust Jim Boylan to give a consistent environment to develop Lowry. Like, they let him sort of run some point forward, point center stuff during February, and that was when he saw the most success, but it didn't really seem like that there was a consistent offensive philosophy throughout the time that Jim Boylan was coach. They got out and ran after the first few months of slowing it way down, and then towards the end it seemed like they slowed things back down again. Some of that was maybe the injuries that they had towards the end of the year, and the injuries that they had kind of at the start of Boylan's tenure, but I don't know. I'm not a big Boylan guy.
Will, what do you make of them, like, with this? Like, they're clearly very committed to him, and like Paxton put on a huge show at his end of season press conference with, like, we love what Jim does. Like, we love him as like a teacher, and we think he brings the fire and the passion and all that stuff. Like, so I feel like there's just like there's obviously like a huge disconnect between like what the like management and the front office thinks of Boylan, and like, I guess the players kind of came around with him, but then like what the fan base, like from the outside, like I feel like somebody with the outside of the Bulls, and they like love to talk about that, like in our building, like we really like what Jim does. But from like the fan perspective, from like the national media perspective, even like other players in the league, like we saw that poll with The Athletic about how Boylan was like second for like the coach you'd least want to play for. Obviously there was all the goofy stuff with like the near mutiny. We've seen all like the goofy ass quotes and all that nonsense. So it's like, They clearly think he's great, but I feel like, but fans and everybody else thinks that he's just a big buffoon. Like, I'm assuming, do you go towards more the buffoon and like, why is this guy still coach or what?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'm as aggressive on the take that Ricky has held, and I think we've lost Ricky for the podcast. So, heads up to the audience. But
I did notice that. Yeah, Ricky was having some technical difficulties, the old internet, you know, that horrible stuff. So we're gonna take from here. He got the intro in, got a good intro. So he did his part. we'll take from here.
Yeah.
But back to Jimbo Boylan. Carry on.
Yeah. So I don't think I'm quite as aggressive on like he should for sure have been fired, but I don't understand extending him. I think that, you know, I do think he improved over the course of the year for the most part, but or at least I thought I was seeing improvement until, you know, the last month or so of the year where they went, you know, kind of back to being complete crap as a team. And, you know, maybe that was just shoring up their tanking or whatever. But
I mean, some of that was roster. I mean, they were playing complete I mean, they was playing like G League guys, and obviously they were holding out guys. Like, I mean, it's just kind of hard to like, I mean, they did have the good February, and then, but then even they did start kind of going backwards as well, even before they were starting to get hurt. Especially that part of the season, I feel like it's going to be so hard to figure out like what's what, because it's just like across the league, like there's so many, like a lot of times I feel like there's weird outcomes with teams either just like playing out the string, teams resting guys or getting ready for the playoffs. I feel like it's just such a weird, because they're obviously going to hang their head on what they did in February and how they played. But like I'm just curious how much that actually like matters and how sustainable that is moving forward. I honestly don't know. Like, it's hard. Like, I want to be optimistic about it, but we've talked about it in the pod before. It's like, how much stock can we actually put in Boylan on that stretch, the team in that stretch? Because like that was like during that stretch, they were getting like career like best play from Lowry, from Zach, from Otto, from Robin Lopez, and like it was crazy. So like I just don't know how much of that is sustainable from the players and from the coach.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing too, is I don't know, like I'm, you know, generally try to evaluate things using as large of a sample as I can, just because it's easy to get fooled by, you know, short stints. But it's tougher with a young team because sometimes those flashes or whatever can be indicative of sort of what could be. I think that there's something to that to a certain extent, but I think that most fans do get caught up too much in the believing the best case scenario when they do those flashes. So, you know, I definitely tend towards the more pessimistic. I think getting back to, I think the original question that you asked in terms of how we got down this path was like, who on the team do I really believe in or think it could be a cornerstone? Is like, I think Lowry definitely has a lot of talent. I'd like to see him actually start shooting at the level that I think that his shooting stroke and, you know, his college numbers and international numbers suggested the kind of shooter that he was. I don't really think we've totally seen that in terms
of. We definitely haven't. He's been like 36%, I think, both years around there. And I feel like you'd think he'd be high 30s, close to 40, like you would hope at this point, or I guess just in general. So I think that's definitely a good point.
Yeah. And I did like seeing him handle the ball a bit more. I want to see more of that just because I think that it is the fact that his ball handling skills at his size are very, very rare. And especially when he gets out in the transition game, you know, I think that there's not many guys in the league that can really handle the ball at that size and make good decisions with it. And I think that, you know, to really unlock his full potential, he's got to be a playmaker for others. And that, you know, after his first year, that was really my biggest concern with him is, you know, I think he'll get to passable on defense and get to a point where I don't know that he'll ever be a plus defender, but like I think he'll be the kind of guy that teams won't be able to just search out and abuse, which I think is, you know, that's
for sure
for a player like him that is going to provide a lot of value on offense. You know, if he reaches his ceiling, you want to see him get to a point where he can't be punished in a playoff series, basically. And I believe in his ability to get there. But I think in terms of actually having like superstar level impact versus just being a role player who shoots threes, you know, making him a playmaker and having him use the threat of his scoring to free up, you know, his less talented teammates, that is something that I didn't really see his rookie year. And for large parts of this year, you didn't really see it. But that February run where he and the rest of the team looked really great, that was what he was doing. I think that that's really the key to his development is, can he become a guy that creates opportunities for others and creates high quality looks for others. And I think he has the talent to do it. It's just a matter of, you know, whether that gets cultivated in Chicago and with the coaching staff and whether he's afforded that opportunity. As far as the other two, I think guys that I view it, like, I think are kind of consensus guys that are viewed as part of the core. I'm still very high on Wendell Carter, very disappointed in how he was utilized this year. I think he's a face-up shooter. I think he's, everybody compares him to Al Horford, and I think that's a pretty apt comparison. And I think that the way that they tried to, that Boylan wanted him to, run post-ups and stay near the basket and get paint points is just completely asinine, which is one of the reasons I didn't have a lot of confidence in Boylan to develop these guys. Is like, Wendell should be, the Bulls could be playing essentially five out basketball with Wendell, Lowry, and, spacing the floor and having their guards getting into the paint and not having a crowded paint at all. But they just haven't done that. There's a certain part of the paint points thing that I understand and get, because you don't really get high quality 3-point looks unless you're getting paint touches, unless you're getting the ball downhill into the paint. But that's not how Boylan was doing it. He was, slowing it up, throwing these little, throwing the ball into the post and telling guys to back down. And it's like, if you're viewing paint points as a metric of success, without contextualizing what that metric is telling you about how your offense is functioning, you can do some dumb things. And Jim Boylan knows more about basketball than I do.
Both of us and everyone else combined, for sure. Like, we do like to rip on Boylan a lot here, but obviously he is a smart basketball mind. Like, I don't know if you read like the Athletic interviews that he did with Darnell, and there's obviously a lot of good stuff in there, but it's just like, But then he, some of those philosophies, when you talk about, he really hammers home the paint stuff, seems like to the detriment occasionally of the 3-point shooting. I feel like he does downplay 3-point shooting, but he also did talk about they don't want taking too many mid-range shots. So that's also good as well. But just I feel like definitely the slow down post up stuff is stuff that we'd like to avoid. Stuff with Zach LaVine driving. I know there was, I think Darnell also did a Zach LaVine article about his shot selection, how they don't want him taking the bad long twos that he sometimes takes. And he's a guy who should be getting to the rim and chucking threes. There's some right philosophy here. It's just a matter of them actually honing in on it and making sure that they do it. Because with the roster they have, with Lowry, with Zach, even with Wendell, I feel like he wasn't really shooting open threes he should have been. They have the roster to shoot a bunch of threes. There's really no reason that they, especially when they get healthy, they should be shooting more. And I hope that they do that moving forward, because they have a team that can play fun and fast and shoot threes and do stuff like that.
Yeah, there's part of me that thinks that maybe I'm rushing to judgment a little too quickly in terms of, maybe I'm being impatient on they're not wanting Wendell to, they want Wendell to focus on one thing at a time, and they wanted him to focus on his scoring in the paint first over his shooting threes. But, he was almost an 80% foul shooter this year. He had the 3-point shot in his bag coming into the league. I don't think he shot it a ton at Duke, but it was something in AAU ball and, even in summer league that he flashed, and you could see that, and you could just see on his form that he's a guy that can shoot the ball. And given the trends of the league, and I think given, the fact that Chris Dunn is not a great shooter, And they were getting, you know, until they got Otto Porter, they were getting relatively inconsistent shooting from the small forward spot. Like, I think that having your center shoot threes really would have made a lot of sense. And just even from his development standpoint, I think that they got him into his head a little bit, because there were a lot of times after the first few games with Boylan where you could see that it seemed pretty obvious that somebody had gotten in his ear and told him not to shoot threes, and because he was passing up wide open ones, and like things where it seemed like earlier in the year and even in summer league that he would have just let it fly, he wasn't doing that anymore, and that was disappointing to me. But I'm still very high on his upside. I think he's, you know, got special defensive instincts. I think he's a really smart player. You know, I just, they got to utilize him right to maximize what he can be. And then lastly, I guess just to touch on Zach real quick, we've talked about him a little bit. I really liked some of the stuff I saw from Zach this year. I like that he, you know, Zach LaVine, one thing I will credit him for is, with the exception of last year, and I would toss that out because he was coming back from that ACL injury. He's gotten better though. With the exception of that year, he's gotten better basically every single year he's been in the league. I think he works extremely hard in the off season. He's kind of like, you know, people make a lot of jokes about Andrew Wiggins, about how he really hasn't improved and doesn't seem to care that much about it. I don't think that that's the case with Zach. And, you know, I think he understands the things that he struggles with, and, is, you know, works pretty hard at getting better at those things. I still think he's a pretty atrocious defensive player, which I think does hurt. You know, I think of the spots on the floor where you can maybe live with somebody being a bad defensive player, shooting guard is probably one of the better ones. But, you know, in a playoff series, you still don't want to have somebody that can be attacked as easily as he can be. But he's still really young. And I think he does get better every year. Similar to Lowry, I think the biggest thing that I want to see from Zach is just him to continue to develop as a playmaker and eventually get to passable on defense, you know, just basically get to be where he can't be so easily taken advantage of. But he made some real strides this year. I liked a lot. I did think that his shot selection was way better this year.
Yeah, I agree.
I loved seeing him get downhill and get try to get to the basket a lot more consistently and not settle nearly as much as he had in the past. I think that if he continues to do that and then can start to make a little bit better reads and just trust his teammates more, I think that he still has a chance to be, you know. He has the base level skills that you need to be a superstar player in the league. He has some pretty significant flaws that could kneecap that. But I mean, being able to drop, you know, 25 points a night on good efficiency is like, that's the base for what you need to be a star player in the league. Yes, there are other things you need to have to, and that's why he got paid as much as he did.
Yeah. Remind me, were you pro, neutral, negative on the matching that offer sheet from the Kings?
I didn't like it at the time because I was pretty down on because of the flaws that he has. I was pretty down. And I mean, the ACL injury was scary to me. Yeah. He was young.
He was terrible when he came back last year. He was awful. Like, the shot selection was awful. Like, obviously, guys are going to come back and struggle from the ACL, but like, he was really bad. Like all around, absolutely terrible. So I feel like I wasn't negative, but I was kind of like, eh. I feel like now though, like, what is he at, $19 million a year? Like, if he's into, even if he like never gets that much better, like defensively, I feel like if you're putting up 24, 25 a game efficiently, I think his true shooting percent was like 57, 58. Like, I feel like that's at least probably worth $19 million a year at this point with the cap going up, right? I don't know if that's crazy or what. I feel like me and Ricky, I know, both talked about how we were pleasantly surprised by Zach. It sounds like you kind of were as well. I'm kind of pro Zach at this point. I feel like he's tried to be a leader as well. You mentioned the work ethic. So like, I'm definitely down to give him much more of a chance moving forward on this team.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that he's like, you know, I don't know that he's going to be like having him as your number one option.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Is going to lead to great places.
Yeah.
But I'm not like completely going to rule it out either. Like I said, he was in his age 23 season this year. And I think it is notable that, you know, I think he's gotten better every year to a certain extent. And I think that he can be a plus player in the league. I think that there is still a chance that he could improve the defense enough to be to where all the stuff that he does give you offensively is valuable enough that, you know, he's maybe not completely a $19 million or $18 million a year player, but like that he's enough, he's close enough that he's not a millstone or anything like that. I mean,
yeah, not an Andrew Wiggins who's making what, like 25, 26 million a year, and he's bad, legitimately bad. Like,
yeah,
definitely not going to be that kind of contract.
No, I don't think so. But yeah, I mean, I think that, like, I don't know. The Bulls seem like, I think about those three guys, and they all seem to fit pretty well together on paper. But they still just seem so, like, deprived of talent around those guys. And that goes to like kind of like what I was talking about with the process is like they just it doesn't seem like they still even have that many assets to go fill out the rest of the roster. Like, not that they like have a lot of money committed really, but you know, I don't know, they need to get a point guard. Yeah. And they're
Are you done with Chris Doug? I'm pretty much done. I'm done with him as the starter. Like, if he comes back next year, fine, I guess. But like, I'm very down on Chris Dunn. Are you in a similar place? Do you think he's still got places he can go? Like, I feel like I just don't see it with him.
I think Chris Dunn is probably a backup. You know, I think that like the problem with Chris Dunn is that Chris Dunn needs the ball in his hands to be successful, because he's not an off-ball threat. And if Chris Dunn has the ball in his hands for most of your offensive possessions and is like your lead decision maker, you're not going any place good.
I agree with you.
So like if he has the ball in his hands a lot against second units, maybe that's fine. I think even like just when they're both healthy, like flip-flopping him and Archie and just putting Archie Diacono in the starting lineup, because like the starting lineup kind of has enough scoring between Lowry and Zach, and even Otto Porter now.
Even Otto was like really, really good. I mean, he shot, regression obviously probably coming there, but like he was even doing more, even like off the dribble stuff than I was expecting. He was obviously shooting great. So
yeah. Like, I think, you know, when Wendell gets back at the start of next year, I think he's already like, it's crazy to say this because he was 19 year. He like just turned 20 years old, but he was 19 all year, but he, I think, was already like a plus defensive player as a rookie, which just doesn't really happen very often, even for big men, or maybe even especially for big men. I mean, he's definitely not where he's going to be at his peak, but I think he was already having a positive impact defensively. I think his offense was pretty bad this year. Like I said, I think he was completely misutilized, but he was not very effective offensively. But I think like if they use the pieces right, like you could have Archie Diacono, who is a knockdown shooter, at the one, then you have Zach at the two. Zach is an unbelievable shot maker, like very good pure shooter from outside. Otto Porter is consistently one of the best 3-point shooters in the league. Lowry has, you know, at the very least gets guarded like an elite 3-point shooter, even if his percentages haven't quite been there yet. I think they will get there. I still believe in his shooting form. And then, you know, I think that Wendell will be a 3-point shooter at some point. hopefully that's next year and hopefully they allow him to do that. But you could have like a five out system that could really, at the very least with the starting unit, be pretty effective and have a pretty good offensive rating, you know, even next year. But you know, the defense is still probably not going to be very good.
Yeah.
And they're just, you know, they're very like the depth on the team is, I mean, that's part of why, like, Paxton kept complaining about, you know, the injuries, and he's done this 2 years now, but it's like, part of the reason the injuries are so devastating is because your depth is dog shit, dude. Like, you can't have, like, injuries happen every year in the NBA. And yeah, the Bulls were more snake bit than most teams, but, like, you know, you've got to have capable backups, and they just don't. Like,
yeah, man, you're rolling out, like, Big Chris and Blakeney, and when they were playing Campaign earlier this year, like, they believed in Campaign, for fucking crying out loud. He had one big game, and
and
he basically disappeared in the ether. And, like, I mean, Arch has been definitely, like, a nice surprise. Like, Shaq Harrison, I feel like, decent surprise. But, like, I mean, these are still mostly, like, on good teams. Like, probably, like, your third string, maybe second string, if you're lucky. I mean, yeah, you complain about, like, Denzel Valentine. Like, Denzel's fine, but, like, he's always hurt. Like, Hutchinson was obviously a rookie, but, like, he wasn't very good. They're going to have some cap space, so we can talk about that in a little bit here as we move forward towards draft talk and free agency. They have some cap space. They'll have draft picks. They got the second-round pick from, I think, I can't remember what the exact picks they have from getting those holiday picks, and then I think their own second-round pick. But before we do that, let me roll with this ad read here, and then we'll start looking forward for the team, like I said, with draft free agency. Life can be stressful, but getting life insurance shouldn't be. That's why there's Ethos. Ethos is a modern kind of life insurance that's super fast, incredibly affordable, and very uncomplicated. At GetEthos.com, there are no medical exams for policies covering under $1 million. No hours of paperwork or meetings with pushy representatives. It only takes 10 minutes to apply, and you can rest assured knowing you've taken steps to protect your family. And in most cases with Ethos, you can have that peace of mind for less than a cup of coffee a day with no hidden fees. Having life insurance can free you from stress, but getting life insurance shouldn't cause it. Discover how uncomplicated life insurance can be at Ethos. Get your instant quote and submit your complete application in minutes. So just go to GetEthos.com. That's E-T-H-O-S. GetEthos.com. GetEthos.com. All right, so now I figured, like I said, we'll look forward a little bit. Looking forward at the draft. Bulls, obviously, at the number four spot. That's the 12.5% chance at the number one pick. I'm not sure how much draft stuff you've looked into this season yet. Obviously, Zion Williamson's the number one overall pick. I would assume that are you all aboard the Zion as number one guy? Are you a contrarian on this at all? I know there was some rumblings about how, like, the Suns might like Ja Morant over Zion or stuff like that. What do you think about Zion and his fit on the Bulls if they got number one?
I'm all aboard the Zion train. The idea that the Suns would prefer Morant over Zion would be extremely Suns.
It would.
But
I don't think they actually do. I think there was a rumbling where, like, there was some talk about how they might, because they've been looking for a point guard forever. So it's like, well, I also saw, did you see the column that some dude in Phoenix wrote about how they shouldn't take Zion?
I saw the headline and I just was dumbfounded that somebody that gets paid to write about sports could have a take so bad. But legacy publications, man, they're it's wild.
Yeah. So I guess, like, if the Bulls did get Zion, obviously you said you're on the Zion train, how would you operate there with the starting lineup? Like, would you go with, like, a jumbo lineup? Would you start by bringing him off the bench? Would you look to make a trade, maybe? What would you be your strategy if they were able to pick up Zion?
I don't know exactly what the best fit would be in terms of how to make all that stuff work. I'm a pretty firm believer in, you know, you just, especially at this stage, you just take the best talent available, and figure it out. You know, I think that that can sometimes, you know, be an issue. Like, the Sixers drafted three centers 3 years in a row, during the process. And, you know, that came to back to bite them a little bit because, but I think honestly that had as much to do with
Okafor was bad.
Yeah. Yeah. It just had as much to do with like Okafor being, just not a modern NBA player at all. You know, that became very apparent very quickly, you know, so if he had been sort of like what people kind of thought he might be, or had the ability to adapt his game to the NBA in a way that made sense, early on, like even though they were pinched in terms of minutes and, it became obvious that you can't really have three high level centers on your team. And you know, maybe that would have hurt their market for those assets a little bit. I think they still would have been able to do a little bit better than they did. But, I in general, I just think that you when you're as bad as the Bulls are, and as, you know, lacking in high level talent as I still think that they are, you know, you take the blue chip guy and figure it out. The figuring it out part it won't be that easy, but you know, if you want to play Zion at like point center or something like that, and it means that Wendell has to come off the bench or whatever, like, you know, that would stink for Wendell. And I, like I said, I'm pretty high on Wendell, but I think, you know, you could have those three as like a front court of the future. I'm also not completely convinced that Zion, given how athletic he is, couldn't play small forward. Obviously the jumper is pretty weird, and you'd have to figure that part of it out. And then, you know, what do you do with Otto, et cetera. But like, you know, I don't know. I would try all kinds of crazy stuff with Zion.
Yeah, you might as well. Like, I mean, people obviously are excited about playoffs and all, like the Bulls taking a big jump. I mean, Zion might be able to do that just because he's so talented, maybe. But like, you're still, whatever, year three of a rebuild. You just lost 60 games. You might as well try some crazy shit. Like, why not? Like,
yeah. If
you
have I would try him at point guard, like, yeah. And just play like the normal lineup and just say, all right, Zion, you're going to run the point. And it's like, you know, you'll probably make a lot of mistakes because like you haven't played that initiator role that much. You know, at Duke, but like, we're just going to, you know, stretch the limits of what you can do. And it doesn't really matter because we're not winning anything right now anyways. And, you know, we want to, like, that's the biggest thing, like with going back to the me complaining about Wendell being told not to shoot three pointers is it's like, just let him stretch his limits. You know, like this season is kind of a wash anyway. Why are you putting limits on what guys can do? Let them try to see develop their skills.
At that point, like, I feel like that's why the stuff about like when Boylan was like hammering home, like the, we need to crawl before they can walk stuff. When they were playing super slow, it was just like, I don't buy it. Like instead of like actually like maybe taking advantage of their skill sets, which we saw in February when they actually started opening things up, like, I don't really understand what slowing it down and like breaking down their offense, what it did for them. All they did was perform like at like historically bad offensive levels. And I feel like they were playing slow. They were playing like scared, timid. Like that's, you have a young team that can, with athletic players and guys who can shoot, like, why are you, I don't think they really learned anything from slowing it down. They didn't start playing better until they started opening it up again. So like, I feel like that goes kind of into that, like try to take advantage of these guys' skills and not hinder them and limit them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing is like, these guys are so young and, you know, obviously they're very talented players. You know, given like relative to their age level, there's a reason that they're lottery picks or whatever. So like, you know, I think that jamming them into a specific mold and telling them you can do this, but you can't do this early, I just think it's a mistake. So yeah, I mean, if they got Zion, like I would do any number of crazy things with him. As far as like outside of Zion, I think that like I like from a numbers perspective, like I think that what Ja Morant did in his season was pretty impressive. His dunks were pretty cool.
Yeah, they were.
But you know, people that watched him a lot closer than I did had some concerns about the size and you know, the ability to translate defensively, which obviously, you know, given the fact that, you know, he'd be sharing a backcourt with Zach LaVine is a bit problematic. But I think that, like, I don't know, they do need a point guard, and he seems like clearly the best of the bunch. So I wouldn't be super mad at that. And he definitely, I think, in terms of like star upside, just because of the insane like usage that he carried and still, you know, did pretty well with, I think that, you know, that's one of the things that you look for as much as anything in young players is, you know, are they able to dominate at the level that they're at? And he definitely did that. So, you know, yeah, maybe he's not going to be a plus defender, but like, I don't think Trae Young is ever going to be a plus defender either. And he's a better athlete than Trae Young and carried like a similar, usage rate as Trae Young. And I don't think, you know, I don't think he's quite the same level of passer as Trae Young, but he made some pretty insane reads, just from some of the plays that I saw. You know, I don't know, again, I didn't watch him that closely.
Yeah, neither did I. What I saw in the tournament looked like really good with the passing. He shot better. Like that second game, that Florida State game where he made like five or six like pull-up threes, like, I feel like that really helped him. Like, hey, this guy looks fucking great. Like he's making all these like crazy threes. Like I feel like that was probably a bit not really indicative of his qualities of a shooter. But in terms of like the vision and the passing, that stuff looked really special. And I feel like I think that kind of stuff was happening most of the season from what I can tell. Like, I'm with you. I didn't watch Murray State basketball that closely this season.
Yeah. And then like, I know a lot of people like in draft Twitter seem to like Jarrett Culver, but then he like kind of didn't,
he was bad.
he was pretty bad at the end of the tournament, but like, I don't know. I don't think you can get too caught up in those small samples of like one game in the tournament. I mean, it's not great. You would prefer if he played better, but I wouldn't like necessarily let that deter me if I really liked what I saw from him overall. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Those are kind of the names that I've been looking at. So I will not name names, but I was talking to an analytics guy for one of the teams that I am friendly with, and he basically said that the scouts were talking, the scouts for the team were talking about Cam Reddish, and were basically taking turns one-upping one another in terms of how extreme they could call him a pussy. So not a huge Cam Reddish guy.
Neither am I. He was so highly ranked, and like I kept like waiting for him to do anything, and he was just bad. Like his offensive numbers were just so bad. Like he didn't even shoot that well. Like, and he probably will. I guess he might be a guy who will do better with like more spacing, and maybe if he gets more chances. But like he was bad when Zion was hurt too. Like, so it's like that. I don't know how much an excuse is legitimate. Like, oh, he was the third option. It's like he was bad when he was the second option too. And just like his finishing around the basket was so bad. Like you said, he was just kind of soft. Like,
yeah,
someone will take him in the top 10. And I feel like I should better not be the Bulls. It'll be brutal.
Yeah. I mean, I take that, opinion with, you know, whatever it's worth, like they're the scouts, and those guys tend to be come in pretty hot with their takes about sort of player's character or whatever. You know, whenever you read those anonymous scout quotes, they're always kind of like that. But yeah, I mean, I was not, from what I saw of Reddish and like what I read about him from people that watched him a lot closer than I did, didn't like at all what I heard. And then like very similar with RJ Barrett, but for different reasons. Barrett is like the type of player that I am I think gets consistently way overrated, and I am not really a fan of.
He gets numbers. He puts up big numbers that look great, but just like when you look closer and some like the decision making he makes, like we saw it at the end of the Michigan State loss they had, just like they lost to Gonzaga. I don't know if you saw when they lost to Gonzaga, just like decision making just not good, just forcing stuff, like poor shot selection. And like I know his defense I don't think is that good, and like obviously this. He is super young. Like he did put up great numbers as a freshman, but like I feel like some of just like the intangible stuff there is, you really make a question. He's not a good shooter either. Like, people talk about Zion like being a bad shooter. Like, Barrett shot like 30% from three and is a bad free throw shooter. Like, I know sometimes you shoot bad from three, but if you have the good free throw numbers, like, that makes you feel better about like their shooting. He was bad at both, so like, that's something you have to worry about there with him as well.
Yeah, there's just nothing about Barrett's profile that is something that is appealing to me. Like, I just, these guys that are primarily scorers that, you know, have tunnel vision and don't seem to, you know, make guys around them better. I really do not particularly care for that, player type. Like, I don't know. I think it's insane to me that Barrett took, I'm looking at their sports reference page right now. Barrett took, like five times, or had almost five more, shot attempts per 100 than Zion did. And Zion's like true shooting percentage was like insanely good, and Barrett's was trash. And so it's just like, and that's even with Zion not being a very good foul shooter either. Like, they're both were like mid 60s on foul shooting. But like, I don't know. Barrett is just not a good decision maker. He, you know, he had like, you know, a decent assist percentage, but he also had the ball in his hands like all the time, and had really good players around him. So you would, you know, hope that he would have a better assist percentage than like 20-ish percent, considering how high his usage was and how good his teammates were. But no, it wasn't. And just like, I don't know, like, I watched a few Duke games just because the Bulls were so bad, and you know, these three guys were so highly touted, and the only one that seemed worthwhile, you know, was Zion. And I mean, that's the biggest thing too, is just like, the thing that sucks is that this is like, feels very much like a one player draft, and the Bulls only have a 12% chance of landing that one player. And I think we talked about that. I wanted to get into this a little bit, but like, tanking sucks, man. Like, I don't, like, people were like all about like, yeah, we got to get rid of Jimmy because we can't build a title contender with him. And we got to hit the reset button. And I'm so like, I'm just getting old and, or whatever, but like, I'm tanking is like, feels like a young man's game, because it's like, you have all these years ahead of you to just like, and I'm not like, you know, I'm in my 30s, but like, I'm sick of watching dog shit basketball, man. It's only been 2 years, but like, you know what was better than this year, even though there was like no chance that they were ever going to win a title, was watching the Bulls, even with the three alphas and like all the catastrophe that was, like watching those guys go like whoop the shit out of the Celtics in the first two games of that series. That was fun. That was enjoyable. Like, and watching them win like a good chunk of their games that year. I think they were even just 500. That was way better than watching a team lose 60 games and like get blown out by 50 points multiple times. Like, I think that this idea that like in the NBA, it's not worthwhile to try to like have a good team that is, you know, not necessarily a title contender. Yeah. I just think that that's dumb. Like the
title or bust has like really taken over, like title, basically like title or tank. Like, I feel like it's become very pervasive around the league and among fan bases. Like, I mean, teams like, if you look at like the Jazz, like they, like, I don't know if they're, where they're going to go. Like, you look at the Grizzlies, like the grit and grind Grizzlies, like those teams were consistently good, never quite go over the top. The Raptors for a while, but and every, like after every year, people are like, oh, are they going to blow it up? Are they going to blow it up? Are they going to tank? It's like, well, sometimes it's just like good to be good for, like, even if you're winning 50 to 55 games, even if you don't get to the whatever finals, obviously the goal is to win a title, but sometimes it's just like good to be good. Like, for a while, I'd rather watch fun basketball. And even if they're whatever, a second round out a few years in a row, I think that's probably more enjoyable than hoping to bank are hoping to get super lucky through the draft and tanking multiple years. It seems like you also believe in that kind of mentality.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not you know, out here saying that the Bulls should like be sacrificed. Like, I don't think that you chase the playoffs, you know, just to chase them or like sacrifice the future, you know, a ton of future assets to do it. Like, there's ways to, like, Houston, you know, built a team that was consistently getting to the playoffs without sacrificing any like future assets and built up their coffers with like late first round draft picks because Daryl Morey is really good at his job. And like, there are ways to build from the middle and still have a competitive team. It's difficult, but you know, that's the job, is to do a very difficult thing. And I just think that it's like such a cop out, and it's honestly like, it's like all these general managers have successfully like leaked it out to the media and it feels like they've like hypnotized fans into like buying into this idea that like, you know, losing a shitload of games is actually good. And it's not, man. Like, it sucks. And it's, you know, the Bulls had one, like, Jimmy Butler, the last year that the Bulls had him, was a top 10 player in the league. And if they, you know, had put in, you know, maybe they were right to anticipate that he would fall off, but I don't actually think that Jimmy's like that markedly worse this year. I think that he's
just, his public perception has taken a huge hit, obviously. Yeah. I mean, last year he took the Timberwolves to the playoffs, basically. Yeah. And they hadn't been there, and the Timberwolves were awful this season. Like,
yeah,
obviously they had the whole mess with him to start the year, and that's on him. Like, he does have his personality issues, and like, I understand if the Bulls didn't want to deal with that, that's fine. But like, in general, I feel like he's definitely not that much worse. Like, his numbers are definitely lower with the Sixers, but that's part of just like fitting in with the team.
His role is different there. Like, he just doesn't have the ball as much. But like, I was, you know, a huge believer, and I still believe this, that if the Bulls had just like kept Jimmy, kept Nikola Mirotic, and you know, put shooters around Jimmy, including Nico, that like, if you know, you could find guys that can shoot. And you know, whenever, like, I think I've deleted a bunch of my tweets since then, but I had, you know, put out some stuff, and then I think Stefan over at The Athletic had actually written something about like the Jimmy with shooters phenomenon. And basically, if you put like even two shooters on the floor with Jimmy, it didn't matter which shooters it was. The Bulls like net rating was insane every time that was the case. And it was
it was something like him, like it was playing with like him and even like Doug, who sucks, like him, Doug, and like Nico. And like, pretty sure they had like really good offensive ratings and pretty good net ratings overall.
Yeah. And that was like my whole thing, was like, just, you know, give the ball to Jimmy. You know, get a Patrick Beverley type. It didn't have to be Patrick Beverley, but just a point guard that is good at shooting threes and can, you know, hold his own on defense. Beverley does more than holding his own, but like, that doesn't necessarily need the ball in his hands. And you know, then, you know, we had Doug. We didn't have to get rid of him. Like, I was never a huge Doug fan, but his one useful skill set was shooting threes. We had Tony Snell, who also was like a solid defensive player, didn't really do much else besides play solid defense and shoot threes, but like, he shot threes. And you know, when you put enough of those guys on a roster, like, you know, if you have a guy that can get into the paint consistently and spray the ball out to shooters, you know, you're going to have a good offense, and like, you're going to win more of your games than you lose. And like, I think that the Bulls easily could have built a consistent, you know, high 40s, low 50s win team with Jimmy as a centerpiece. And they just were lazy. Like, they were just like, we can't do it. He's difficult to deal with. Let's just, you know, blow it up. And it's like, that's such a cop out. And they could do it because they have ultimate job security. Jerry Reinsdorf's never going to fire them. And you know, fans deserve better than that. And like, I think that fans falling into this, like, you know, tanking is good, or like, oh, Jimmy Butler can't be the best player on a championship team. It's like, so what? He can be the best player on a second round out. And like, guess what? making it to the playoffs and winning a first round series, that shit is fun. Like, ask Portland if they would rather be the Bulls right now. Like, they just beat the shit out of the Thunder and it ruled. It was awesome. And there's no way that they would trade that in at like the whatever 12% chance that we have to get Zion and maybe turn this garbage heap around. Like, there's no way. They just wouldn't do it. And like, Dame Lillard is a great player. I don't know that he's like way, way, way better than Jimmy Butler. Like, he was better than Jimmy this year, but you know, just an overall.
I mean, you mentioned the Blazers. I mean, they're a team that just like, they got swept out of the playoffs last year and everyone was talking about them blowing it up last year. Now they're back and they have a great chance at the Western Conference Finals. And if maybe something goes right, maybe, I mean, they're probably not going to go to the finals, but like, they stuck together and Dame got better. Obviously just completely outplayed Russ. So that's definitely a good point. The Blazers are another one of those teams where like, instead of blowing it up, they believed in their guys, they believed in Dame, and now they're in the second round and they have a chance to go to the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing too that's just so frustrating is like, because the Bulls management has like ultimate job security, like they could have tried to build around Jimmy, and like, even if it didn't like ultimately result in, you know, any of these like deep playoff runs or whatever, it's not like it was gonna like kill them, but they could have like put out believed in their own ability to build a team. And like Ricky has talked about this all the time, a bunch of times, that like they just had no confidence in their own ability to like build a team, and they were just like, well, this is getting too difficult, let's hit the reset button, and that way all the expectations will be off and we won't have to worry about anything because we're not gonna get fired, and now we don't even have to try because like, not trying is part of, you know, part of the deal with a tank. And it's just like, that's such bullshit, man. Like, fucking do your job.
You're clearly not a big fan of the front office, like most of us here. And I mean, they've been around for so long. It was kind of crazy. We were talking about this earlier, I was watching the SB Nation did a thing about the breakup of the Dynasty Bulls. And they kind of just did the few years after. And then they talked about, and then John Paxson takes over in 2003. And like, when they started bringing the baby Bulls back, it's like, John Paxson has been running this front office since 2003. Like, it's absolutely insane. Just the job security that they have. And like, obviously that also goes to ownership and the Reinsdorfs. They have super loyal and all that stuff. Like, I mentioned this on the last pod, where it's like, I'm hoping that they do, like, and Paxson was kind of talking a big game about them taking a big step. Like, I'm hoping maybe that the fact that they're talking a big game about like maybe going to the playoffs next year, that maybe they'll actually lead to some accountability. But that's probably just me wishful thinking, because if they actually do fail next year, like, they should be fired. Like, maybe somebody will actually be fired for once, but that's probably wishful thinking, right?
Yeah, I mean, this idea that they're going to make the playoffs next year is a joke to me. Anybody listening to this podcast, if you first person to reach out to me on Twitter, I will bet you $100 that the Bulls will not make the playoffs next year. There is no way. It is not happening. They won 22 games this year. They would need to win.
It's like 20 more games.
They would need to almost double their win total. Yeah, they would need to almost double their win total. There is no way. It is not happening. Even if they get Zion. Zion is going to be a rookie. Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, they are so far away from being a good team. They have no depth. Like, they have three, like, interesting prospects on the team. And then just a whole like stack of shit. Like, it's a bad team. It's a really bad roster. There's a reason they can't absorb any injuries. They are probably going to spend all their cap space on like one point guard, and then they're just going to have a bunch of like just a bunch more crap. And there's no way. Like I said, anybody. I'm not going to bet every single person that comes, but if the first person that gets to me, I will bet anybody $100 that they do not make the playoffs next year, because the roster is dog shit.
You heard it here first. At NBA Couchside, reach out to them. $100 bet. I guess to finish up here, then, like, just looking forward to this offseason free agency. Is there anything you would like to see them do? They're going to have what, like 20 million cap space. Like, obviously we talked about they could really use a point guard. They could use depth. Are there any moves you'd really like to see them make?
I mean, he's older than I would like for them to bring on, but like people have talked about bringing Patrick Beverley home to Chicago. I think that I would enjoy that just because like I think Patrick Beverley rules, and like I just like that he pisses off all the other stars.
We know Jimbo would like him.
Yeah, I think the synergy of Patrick Beverley's bulldog mentality with Jim Boylan's road dog mentality. There'd be just a lot of dog mentality, and I think the Bulls could use that. And I also just like, you know, I think just even from like an on-court fit, I think he'd be helpful because he can shoot and he plays really aggressive, tough defense. And the Bulls need two-way players.
Yeah.
Basically, I mean, if they can't get him, I would, you know, I like Ricky Rubio. I think Rubio is a little bit more dynamic offensively in terms of like setting up, not in a scoring perspective. He's obviously a terrible shooter. He airballed a go-ahead three-pointer tonight in a go-home game. That wasn't great, but like he is a very good facilitator. He's a good defensive player. He would up the handsomeness quotient on the Bulls. So not that the Bulls are a bad looking team. I think that they're, they've got some handsome fellas on the team, but Ricky Rubio, notoriously handsome Spanish man. So
fine beard.
Yeah. Fine. Yeah. The Spanish Jesus look, I think it works pretty well for Ricky. But yeah, I think that, those are the two guys that I think that I would look at. I mean, I saw the rumor about them potentially trading for Jrue Holiday. I just don't know what they would offer. I mean, I think like unless they're offering like their own pick this year, like if it's a non number one pick, like if it's a top four or five pick, but not Zion, you know, I guess I could see that. They'd probably have to include some extra salary to make that work. But I don't know, like, Jrue Holiday makes a lot of money, and it probably that would I would lose my $100 bet because I think Jrue Holiday.
Yeah, I love the idea of it. Just like in general, like on paper, like I feel like Jrue would be like a very nice fit on this team with what they need in terms of like he's a good two way player. He's a dog. Like he can play on and off the ball with Zach. Like I feel like that'd be great. But like you mentioned, he's got like almost $80 million on 3 years left on his deal. I know the last year's like a player option, I think. And like you said, what do you trade for him? Like, I feel like the Bulls would not want it, even if their pick like stays at four. I feel like that even trading that for that seems like trying to take shortcuts. Like, I feel like I don't know if they'd really want to do that. And it seems like the Pelicans really, they might be bluffing right now. Like, they're going to trade. David Griffin's talking a big game about how they're going to try to keep Davis and how Jrue is like a building block. Maybe that's all bluffing. They're obviously going to trade Davis. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they keep Holiday. I mean, I don't know if they're going to want to go full blown rebuild in New Orleans. Like, they might want to keep Holiday around and try to build around him. So I'm not even sure if he's going to be available. But like, I feel like if they're going to trade him, they're not going to trade him for cheap. So I feel like it might be just tough to find common ground on a deal there with where both teams are at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that also just goes to the Bulls not having like a huge coffer of assets to really dive into to make those kinds of moves, which that, you know, circling back to what we were talking about at the very start of things is like, that's the difference between what the Bulls are doing and the process. Like, they haven't accumulated all these assets, really. They have three guys that I feel pretty good about. I don't think any of them is a sure thing. And then, you know, a possibly good draft pick in a not great draft this year, and then a whole lot of So like, you know, there's just not a whole lot that you can get there. I say if they did trade their pick in like, I don't know, Felicio's contract and plus their like the rest of it going into cap space, they traded Jrue for that or something. I don't even know if that works. I'd have to plug it into the trade machine. But if they did something like that, then yeah, I would lose my bet. They would probably make the playoffs because Jrue is that good. and the, you know, the bottom of the East is, you know, still pretty bad, but, but you know, I don't know. Even then though, like they'd still only be adding one very good player and, their depth would still be awful. So I don't know. It would still be dicey, I think, even then for them to make the playoffs. So yeah, I don't know. There's not a lot that they can really do. I don't, it's not like a particularly great free agent class, and who wants to come sign with the Bulls for, to, you know, play with a team that just won 22 games.
Right. Exactly. Like, I feel like they're probably going to go out. I would guess they'll obviously try to get a point guard. They'll probably try to add a few just veteran guys, fill out the roster. I certainly don't expect any big moves. Like,
oh,
I've talked about like Malcolm Brogdon as an option, but I feel like they'd have to use their whole cap space for that. And
yeah,
I don't even know if folks would want to keep him. And I don't know if you, that's a guy you really want to overpay. Even, I like the fit there as well, but like, are you going to pay Malcolm Brogdon $20 million a year? I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, giving. I like Brogdon as a player. I don't know that I want to be paying him the same amount that they're paying Zach LaVine.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
But I will say one thing that I don't want them to do is I do not want them to bring back Derrick Rose. I've seen what seems like them bringing the or laying the groundwork, to bring Derrick Rose back, and no, just no. Do not do it. It's a bad idea for basketball reasons. It's a bad idea for ethical reasons. It's just no. Stay away from it. It's a terrible idea. If they do that, I will be insanely mad, and probably, I don't know, just yell about it on Twitter, because that's what I do. I just yell into the void.
Ricky and I both agree with that. It just doesn't make sense. Like you said, on multiple levels, like. But when you, even setting, I don't want to set aside like the ethical stuff, the rape stuff, but all that stuff. But just like the bass in terms of basketball, like he still gets hurt. I mean, he had another surgery. Like he only played like 50 some games. Like, and he like he was bolstered this year, like a huge, like huge hot start with his 3-point shooting, and then it completely fell off the table. Like, he's, I mean, he's still like fine, but like just the Bulls have to move on. Like, I mean, if they want to bring him back like at the end of his career or something, and do like a whatever. Something like that down the road, like whatever. I feel like just right now in a rebuild, it just makes no sense. Like you said, on multiple levels, on and off the court. I'm totally with you on that.
So yeah, as long as if they avoid that, you know, I don't think they have a lot of great options this offseason, but if they can just avoid doing that, given where I'm at with this front office, I will count that as a win. But like if they're gonna do the you know, Chicago, like they're reprising the bring a Chicago guy to the Bulls,
Taj or Joe, man.
Yeah, like you know, or Patrick Beverley. Yeah,
as a Chicago guy. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, if they've got to have a local boy comes home story, please just make it Beverley and not D Rose.
Not D Rose. Yeah, I'm with you. I feel like Beverley would be. I feel like they could really use somebody with Beverley's edge. But again, like, and the Clippers will not want to give him up. I feel like that's a guy you're also going to have to like overpay if you're going to take him away from the Clippers, who are leading the Warriors at halftime. They just dumped 71 points on them at halftime. We'll see how that second half goes, but that's Clippers are a really interesting team, just super super fun, great story this year, good for them. I feel like it's gonna be hard to get Beverly away from them unless you really throw out a ton of cash.
Another team that has built through the middle and has not tanked. There are plenty of examples of this being a thing, and you know, smart teams do it. And I don't like, I think that fans really just demand more from their franchise. I mean, I think some fans are starting to feel that way with the Bulls, because like you actually started to see attendance suffer this year in a way that I don't think it had in the past. And like season ticket renewals, I think that's been an issue. I've seen Matt from Bloggable talking about that. Basically the organization trying to threaten's not quite the right word, but entice people into re-upping their season tickets by suggesting that maybe they won't be available later, you know, regardless of whether or not they've already been sold off to somebody else. Like, you better lock in now or else, you know, you're out of here, which I don't know. Weird strategy, but
bold strategy, Cotton.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. They're just such a mess, man. Like, it's this team.
I'm trying to be optimistic. I tried to be optimistic coming into this season. I'm going to talk myself into them being like, okay. Like, I'm not definitely not playoff team, but like, talk myself into them being okay next season, especially depending on what happens this summer. Maybe they'll actually surprise us for once and be somewhat enjoyable. Because like, I feel like just the last like 4 or 5 just have just been not been enjoyable at all. Like, I just want to enjoy watching my favorite basketball team again. Damn it, it's been tough lately.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think we all kind of like laughed at them and like we're like, oh, the 3 alpha season. I think everybody was pretty annoyed with them because just that off season was just real dumb. Everybody could see it coming that the, you know, Wade and Rondo and Jimmy weren't going to be like a great fit on the court together. And they tried to sell it. But even that season, like by comparison, was a lot more fun than this shit.
So, yeah, at least Jimmy like became a legitimate top player. Like they did have those fun playoff games until it went to shit. But like, yeah, I don't know. But and even like going back, like, I feel like I've said this before. I think the last like bowl season I actually like enjoyed was, or like really enjoyed was, I think Noah's defensive player of the year when he was like the MVP candidate. And that was what, 2013-14? Was like the Tibbs's last year was kind of miserable because it was all drama. And there were some fun moments there, obviously, as well. Like D-Rose hitting the 3 against the Cavs and they were close to upsetting them, but then they got their ass beat in the last. But there was so much crap going on that year too. Like that 2013-2014 year when Joe like broke out and they were all hurt and he basically dragged them to the playoffs. That was like the last time I've like really enjoyed watching the Bulls, and that's, it's like half a decade ago. Like I'm sick of this shit, man. I just want to have fun watching them again.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in the same place. It's
we'll see what happens moving forward. We should probably wrap it up now. We've been going for about an hour. Too bad Ricky bailed on us. His horrible internet. This poor guy bailed on us after like 5. He got us our intro and then had to leave. But Kevin, thank you so much for joining us today. So really appreciate that. We'll definitely have you on again in the future, hopefully with Ricky on board, next time.
Hopefully Ricky's ISP that I will not name in case they sponsor something down the line. Hopefully they get their act together the next time we try to do this.
Seriously, yeah. So you can follow Kevin again at NBA Couchside. And always, as always, shout out to Blue Wire Pods for hosting Cash Considerations. And you can also listen to our playoff pods, Blue Wire Buckets. I was just on the last one after Damian Lillard's crazy three-pointer. That was a lot of fun talking about that and all the other playoff series. So definitely check out that, Blue Wire Buckets. Follow Blue Wire Pods at Blue Wire Pods, just the podcast network. There's tons of good NBA pods. There's football pods, tons of good ones. So that is Cash Considerations. This was Jason. Kevin, thank you very much again, and take it easy, man.
Thanks, man.